Oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. The court has three matters on its oral session docket. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 030848, Rhonda Hicks versus Rice Food Market, Inc. from Harris County in the First Court of Appeals District. Docket number 030995, HEB Ministries, Inc., Southern Bible Institute and Hispanic Bible Institute versus Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board and Commissioner Raymond Paredes from Travis County in the Third District. And docket number 040115, Freedom Newspapers of Texas et al. Versus Conrado M. Cantu from Cameron County in the 13th District. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in each of these matters. The court will take a brief recess between each argument, and we expect to be concluded by noon. These proceedings are being recorded digitally, and a link to the arguments should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day. There is currently one vacancy on the court, which we expect will be filled in the near future. The court is now ready to hear argument in 030848, Rhonda Hicks versus Rice Food Market, Inc.
May it please the court. Mr. Tom Alexander will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the honorable court. Tom Alexander from Houston. I'm here on a case which is here not only because of the dissents, but it's here because it's important to the jurisprudence of the state. One of the things that this court must decide is, where do we draw the line as to when expert testimony is necessary? If it is that we require expert testimony in every case that could suggest expert testimony, aren't we then closing the courts to people with relatively minor claims? Mrs. Hicks, as lawyers go, had a relatively minor claim. She has an unoperated ruptured disc. She received an advice food market when a sign, a 3.5-foot sign, all this is covered by pictures in the record, a 3.5-foot sign that hung over See's Candy, which was placed in a kiosk in the center of the store in order to secure exactly what they secured here, that is, little children dragging their mother to the See's counter in order to get their circuit of See's Candy.
How far was it overhead?
It was, nobody actually measured it, Judge, but it, from the pictures, it appears to be about 9 to 10 feet. There was a kiosk. The sign was attached to the front of the kiosk. The sign...
Help me here. If we Velcroed the sword of Damocles over the spot where you're standing, I assume you would agree with me that would be both, one, dangerous, and two, unreasonable. Correct?
That would be my personal
view. If we Velcroed a feather, on the other hand, right over you, I assume you would agree with me that is neither one, unreasonable, or because Velcro would be expected to hold up a feather, and number two, even if it didn't, not dangerous.
I agree.
Sheet of paper, same thing. Neither unreasonable to expect Velcro would hold it, nor dangerous.
Unless it had something.
Nor a paper clip, nor it's it. Now, this is a three-pound sign made out of plastic.
Plus,
I understand it roughly about the thickness of cardboard. Now, why would our rules weigh more than 3 pounds, I would assume. Why would a 3-pound sign that fell 3 feet, why would you know or have reason to know, number one, it's unreasonable that Velcro wouldn't hold it up, and number two, if it didn't, it would be dangerous. Not just you might get thumped, it would be dangerous.
Your Honor, first let me get into what really we're talking about Velcro. Velcro is...
I'm pretty familiar with Velcro.
Well, so is everyone. That's why I say we need no expert to define it. my children could be great experts on Velcro, the shoelaces have become obsolete. So have attachments of bandages and things like that. Velcro serves a very useful purpose, but weight bearing is not one. And weight bearing over an extended time is certainly not one. Mothers know, and I believe you know, that children's gym shoes are now designed with Velcro laces, which give out before the soles give out, which helps a great deal the purveyors of shoes, but it doesn't help the mothers who could easily replace the laces by a 25 or 50 set lace. But there's no place to do that. Now, nowhere is it suggested that Velcro is to bear any weight at any time, and especially for a length of time. And what's worse about this sign is Velcro, one of the qualities of Velcro is...
So Velcro won't hold up. So I was wrong about the feather. Velcro won't hold up a feather. It's unreasonable to try to Velcro a feather to the wall, because you should certainly expect it won't stay.
Your Honor,
I mean, it'll hold up some weight.
I'm an expert on a lot of things with feathers, I'm not.
Well, I mean, I'm not much of an expert on this either, but surely it'll hold up some weight.
There certainly it could have held up a cloth sign that weighed very little. But what happened in this case, and what is anticipated by the people who manufactured the sign, you know, they put screw holes in each end of the sign, which Rice Food Market blindly ignored and left it there with Velcro, knowing full well, if you'll read the testimony of Mr. Bellheim, commencing on page 106 of the record, Rice knew full well two things about Velcro. One is it was not designed to hold up a weight at all. Second is it does not give way evenly. This lady probably wouldn't have been hurt if both ends of the sign had given away at the same time. What happened was the sign gave way and like a pendulum swung it to her neck.
Mr. Alexander, can you address the issue on constructive notice and actual notice as it was written in the...
I can't address it any better than Mr. Bellheim addressed it. But the seminal case is Corbin versus Safeway. Corbin versus Safeway, this court will well remember, is a great case. We've dealt a lot with grapes in the law, but the Safeway built a rack to display grapes so as to be attractive to customers, and the rack was slanted toward the aisle. They did not put a mat beneath it, did not put any device to keep grapes from falling into the aisle.
Isn't this different than a grape case where perhaps a customer could have knocked a grape on the ground, and therefore the store didn't necessarily have notice of that grape?
Well, Your Honor, they're all different, but this court said in the grape case, and I know the court does not care for reading in the cases that can be avoided, but let me just refresh the court on Corbin. The occupier is considered to have constructive knowledge of any previous defects or dangerous conditions that a reasonably careful inspection should reveal. Unfortunately, I had read Carvin versus Safeway before I cross-examined or called as an adverse witness Mr. Belshine. Court goes further to say the standard of conduct required of a premises owner toward his invitee is the ordinary care that a reasonably prudent person would exercise under all the pertinent circumstances, not on whether a specific set of circumstances would occur. Reasoning and holding of Corbin was reaffirmed by this court in a later case in Southwest Third. I never thought I'd get to Southwest Third, but here I am. Southwest Third, the staircase. It's CMH Homes versus Deneen. It's a 2000 case for this court. It's in the brief. At page 101, in that opinion, the court specifically refused to reject the holding of Corbin, but said that in the CMH Homes case, the stairs were safe when installed, and which they were, but trucks kept backing into them and made them loose. That's an entirely different thing. Nothing ever touched this sign. The sign was installed without utilizing the screw holes. The sign was installed utilizing solely Velcro. The sign was installed knowing that it weighed in excess of 3 pounds. The sign was installed knowing it was attached on either end and that Velcro does not give way evenly. Thus, turning the sign really, as Brister colorfully put it, into a sort of Damocles. It came swooping down on one end. And the testimony of Mr. Belsheim is replete with his admission of knowledge of the inadequacy of the sign. Of course, he didn't admit that he knew the sign would eventually come down like a pendulum on somebody, but he did know that it was inadequately installed.
Counsel, okay. Thank you. Are there any further questions? Your time is up, and you'll have time for rebuttal. And the court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Scott Whistler will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. Mr. Alexander opens, interestingly, with a reference to the need for expert testimony. There's a need for more in this case. This case is about a lack of evidence. There's a dearth, there's a gap, there's stuff missing in order to make the case. And that's why the Court of Appeals rightly reversed the trial court's judgment in this case.
What else would you need if it was a sword velcroed up over the candy counter? Why would you need anything else?
Well, if it was a sword, which I think everyone would recognize as a weapon, as a dangerous instrumentality, you know, we attach a different legal meaning to instruments like that. We don't have that in this case, of course, but we have it as a sign. And what this case has gotten to be about, we've been accused in the briefing of playing semantics, but it's all come to down to how we're going to characterize the evidence in this, that's in this case, or characterize what's missing from the case. What we have, there isn't a lot of disagreement about what little evidence is in this case. The sign was attached with Velcro. The sign was apparently designed to use both Velcro and screws, or Velcro, or screws.
You say apparently. Is that in the record? It wasn't clear to me.
It is in the record.
One or the other or both?
Well, that isn't clear in the record.
Okay.
What's clear in the record, there's provision on the materials for Velcro, and that there are then holes there that are presumably available to use for screws. So we know that evidence is there.
Well, the petitioner's brief says, quote, the sign was equipped to be mounted with screws and Velcro.
Says, and Velcro. So it's equipped that way. We could even say, we don't know for sure because there was no evidence about the design or the intention of the design, but everyone agrees that the provision was made in the materials for screws or Velcro. What happens, though, is the characterization of the way the installation was done is, you know, both by petitioner and then by the dissenting justices in the court below, that's improper. That's an improper installation. And then from improper, we get this logical leap to dangerous, or even beyond that, to unreasonably dangerous. And His Honor has rightly pointed out in this analysis that there's some things missing. What's unreasonable about that? What's dangerous about that? And what is the evidence that this was either unreasonable or dangerous from the moment the inception of its use in this way, this application.
If the sign had been attached with Scotch tape, would you be taking the same position?
Well, we would have some different circumstances there. We don't have
That's
any provision.
I posited it.
We don't have any provision in the materials. No evidence that the materials were designed to be installed with Scotch tape. That is a feasible way of installing the sign. And then certainly some different things would come into play, as counsel has suggested in the briefing, concerning common sense. What do we know about the way Scotch tape works?
Well, if the sign's put up with Scotch tape and it falls, do you agree that it was 9 or 10 feet?
I'm sorry.
Do you agree that the sign fell 9 or 10 feet? Is that in the record?
10 feet.
How far did the sign fall?
I don't believe 10 feet is correct. I don't believe the record is clear in how far it fell. But it was an overhead sign. I don't believe it extended 10 feet above the plaintiff when she was struck.
Is there any indication of how far the sign fell?
I think there is some indication, but I don't think it's clear. I can't put a number on it.
There are pictures in the record that show the kiosk and the location of the sign.
There are.
So I couldn't find any that showed the sign before it fell. Do you disagree that it was about 9 or 10 feet above?
It does not seem to me, and I've looked at the record. I was not at trial. I've not seen physically the sign, so all I have is the pictures, and I don't think the pictures are clear. But that seems high. It seems 9 to 10 feet high on the display from what the pictures represent.
If you want to catch kids, as Mr. Alexander says, 10 feet might be a little high.
Probably.
Does the record give any indication of what that distance is, even if it's unclear or disputed?
Right off the top of my head, Your Honor, I can't report what that distance is, or whether it adequately explains what that is.
If the sign, the over 3-pound sign, is held up with Scotch tape, and it falls, can the jury draw the conclusion from that, along with an admission that a careful inspection would have revealed that it was attached, let's say by Velcro, not Scotch tape. Can the jury reach the conclusion that there was something dangerous about how the sign was affixed to the display from that evidence? Can the jury reasonably reach that conclusion?
Are we talking about Velcro now or Scotch tape?
Velcro. I changed it back to Velcro.
Well, I'm gonna have to restate, or have the question restated, because I'm unclear what you're asking.
Is it improper for the jury to conclude that something wrong happened when a sign attached by Velcro fell and injured the lady?
I think the jury can conclude that something happened wrong. I think the jury can conclude that nobody intended for a sign to fall on people and injure people. So something is clearly amiss. I think there's a gap, though, between that consideration and what the standards this court has put down for a premises case, in which case, because the court has rejected strict liability for premises owners, saying just because an accident happens, we don't hold the premises owner responsible. We require something more, and that's what's missing in this case. And that is, was it unreasonably dangerous? Not just dangerous, but unreasonably so from the moment that it was installed. That evidence is not in the record.
Are you saying the evidence is lacking because of the manner of attachment? Is it because of the Velcro or the weight of the sign? I mean, it seems like we all are familiar with the properties of Velcro. And if we're all familiar with it, I don't understand why a jury couldn't find some evidence of constructive knowledge on Rice's part, unless you're saying that it's the weight of the sign not being capable of injuring someone. I'm not sure I follow your argument.
Well, I would have to differ with your Honor about the fact of what we know about Velcro. I recall David Letterman hanging in a suit of Velcro from a wall, and at the time he was about 175-pound man. So Velcro there are some other considerations that go into a calculation of what the holding power of Velcro is. The amount of Velcro that we're using, the position of the Velcro on the object being held. And there is a range here, as the court in its questioning has indicated, that a feather, I mean, Does anybody think that a feather could not be held by Velcro?
But is there such a thing as a Velcro expert?
I haven't been doing this a long time, but I would have to think that there are several people willing to step up.
I bet you could find one.
I would think I could find one on the break.
Is your contention that that's what's lacking here, that there needed to be some expert testimony in with respect to what Velcro properties are?
I don't think it even needs to be an expert. If we're talking about whether something is dangerous, there's lots of ways to prove a dangerous condition without getting an expert. I mean, the sign hadn't fallen. There's no indication that the sign had fallen before. There's no indication that Rice Foods had tried Velcro installations in any of its stores and that had failed miserably. There's lots of ways you can get to this issue of whether something's unreasonably dangerous in a particular situation.
Using Justice Wainwright's example of the Scotch tape, I mean, everybody knows what Scotch tape does. How it works and so forth. And I would think that by now we pretty much know the same kind of properties with respect to what Velcro does. Why wouldn't it be something that evidence being before a jury can sit there and listen and decide whether they think it's dangerous or not, considering all the other evidence that's there, the size and weight of the sign and so forth, and can make the determination when Rice Foods put that sign up there, they knew what they were doing. They knew what Velcro would do or wouldn't do. Why would that be some evidence of that?
Well, I guess the analysis breaks down when we want to talk about a substance and leave aside the way in which a substance is being utilized. I can envision, if I have enough Scotch tape, I could make this sign permanent. My dad taught me how to use duct tape, and I know that if you use enough duct tape, anything can become permanent. And so you can characterize a situation in a pejorative way and make it sound bad. All they use was Scotch tape. All they use was Velcro. And I think that's the attempt here, is to characterize the substance used in such a way that it starts to sound bad, like Spam or polyester or naugahyde. Those are it's a bad thing. Velcro can't be used because everybody knows what Velcro is. But I would contend there's no evidence in this case to suggest that there isn't a safe way or that there aren't ways to use Velcro that makes sense. And I think looking at the sign itself, why did it have both Velcro and screws?
It strikes me that you're making a jury argument here. It's hard for me to say there's zero evidence upon which a jury could find constructive knowledge.
Well, I'm going to contend that there's no evidence, because we've got some evidence from which reasonable people, and because we've got justices dissenting, showing that even intelligent and trained people can differ about the inferences to be drawn from that piece of evidence. I mean, what we have is a sign installed with Velcro, and it apparently held and was doing fine for some time. It's not clear how long. But all we have from that is that at some point it fell.
But if reasonable people can disagree, then we have to rely on the jury's finding, don't we?
It is said
that reasonable people could disagree on the evidence in this case, and trained justices on the Court of Appeals could disagree. Then we can't overturn the jury verdict if that's the case.
Well, but the court has given itself permission to make judgments about the kind of inferences that can be made from particular pieces of evidence.
This court has disagreed numerous times as to whether reasonable jurors could reasonably disagree about things, have we not?
That's right. And so there is this question of the jury's purview, but then the court has said that there are certain types of...
I agree with that point, but your premise was reasonable jurors did disagree.
That they can't disagree?
Your premise was reasonable jurors disagreed on these facts. If that's the case, then we can't overturn the jury verdict.
Well, I wasn't discussing the jury verdict. I was discussing the judges who are looking at this evidence and making a determination on what is a proper inference. And that's really what this appeal goes to, is that looking at this piece of evidence, the fact that Velcro was used to install a sign, can we infer from that that's improper and therefore unreasonably dangerous?
Is there anything in the record that indicates a step was missed? Because as I read this, it proves to me that something was done wrong in installation of this sign. Whether it's a feather, a sign in the summit, or a sign in here, a feather can fall down and poke somebody in the eye, theoretically, blind them. And that could be reasonably dangerous. So I'm trying to determine if there's a step missing. And if so, why should an owner of a building have a free shot to injure an invitee?
Well, and that gets to the question, I think the way that we framed it, is the court willing to say that the law now is that the failure to install a sign at variance with its design is some evidence of an unreasonably dangerous condition? I mean, in this case, we've got Velcro and screws. The court asks if there's some evidence that a step was missed. Well, petitioner is going to argue that the failure to utilize the screw holes when they're available is some evidence of an unreasonably dangerous condition, and that the failure to use everything available is going to be some evidence to get you to a negligence case. And I'm going to suggest that that's a change in the law, because we've never engaged in this inquiry into design features or intent of the designers or inspecting the material and saying, did they follow the direction? I mean, the old saying, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And so traditionally what we've looked at is, what is actually the condition? Was it unreasonably dangerous? And we've not allowed the shortcut to then go behind and start arguing about whether it was designed to do that, because that opens up a whole another inquiry as to proper design, improper design, adequate design, well, and all of a sudden
the premises cases. But then that takes you to the manufacturer. I'm talking about the responsibility for an owner of a building if he has its employee install a sign, and if there are instructions, I don't know if there are instructions, that say do A, B, and C, and the employee skip B.
Well, to answer the court's question, there is no evidence of that in this case.
Okay.
And there's no evidence that that there were a particular set of instructions that weren't followed, that there were clear directions that were ignored. The evidence is that there were screw holes. The screw holes weren't utilized. There was Velcro. The Velcro was utilized.
Are you taking issue with, you spent a lot of your time and argument talking about lack of evidence of an unreasonably dangerous condition. Are you taking issue that Rice Foods had either actual or constructive knowledge of the condition, whatever it was, good, bad, or neutral?
Yes, we are. Because the argument is, and for the sake of argument, for instance, the dissenting justice has said, let's assume that it was a dangerous condition.
Well, put that assumption to the side.
There's a gap.
The way the Court of Appeals cited the standard in CMH Holmes is actual or constructive knowledge of some condition. The second prong is unreasonable risk of harm. The third prong is exercising reasonable care. But the first prong, as cited by the Court of Appeals, is actual or constructive knowledge of some condition. Are you saying Rice Foods did not have either actual or constructive knowledge of the condition in which the sign or by which the sign was hung? You're not making that assertion, are you?
Well, I guess you're bringing to mind something I hadn't thought about, but that doesn't sound to me like a proper rendition of the standard. My understanding of the court is it's an actual or constructive notice of an unreasonably dangerous condition, not just some condition. So the proper consideration is, does the premises owner?
That's not entirely clear in the cases.
So your position is Rice Foods had actual or constructive knowledge of the means by which the sign was hung, but not actual constructive knowledge that it was hung in an unreasonably dangerous fashion.
I think that's fair, because there is a logical gap then between the condition as it existed at the time of the incident and the condition at the time it was installed. And there's no evidence in this record of what it was at the time it was installed, or whether there was any deterioration. I think Mr. Alexander suggested that nothing happened to the sign, nobody touched the sign. I don't think the record's clear on that. And there's been an attempt to transfer the burden of proof to the defendant to show that the condition was unchanged from its inception. And this is why CMH Holmes is important. The CMH Holmes relies heavily on this standard. that you have actual notice of the creation of the condition if it's unreasonably dangerous at the moment that you created it. And that case is a situation where there was a deteriorating condition. And interestingly, this court assumed that in that case that the premises owner knew that the steps and platform that were installed would deteriorate over time. And that's the strong assumption, that they knew that things were going to go badly. But they said no. The question, and the relevant question then, is what was it like when they installed it? That's what gets you the actual notice. What did they actually have notice of? And in this case, there's no evidence that Rice Foods had actual notice that there was an unreasonable and dangerous condition on the premises at the moment that was installed. If there are no further questions, I thank the court for its time.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. One of the dangers of arguing a case you did not witness is that sometimes matters escape you. And I'm sure it's accidental. But nowhere in this record is there any suggestion that either the manufacturer or Rice had any information that they could use either screws or Velcro.
Why would it come with Velcro if it had screw holes?
It came in Velcro to suggest the place that the top went.
Why would you need Velcro at all if you've got screw holes? Because the screws are going to play. What's the point of Velcro?
The screws were for either end. The sign was imposed upon a canvas kiosk. There was opportunity and screw holes at each end. In the middle, there was canvas. And the Velcro strip was across the top. So as it appears to me, and I think it will appear to the court from looking at the pictures, that the Velcro was to make the canvas stick to the sign rather than the sign stick to the Velcro. I mean, the sign stick to the canvas. But nevertheless, those pictures are there. And I'm not here to make my jury argument again.
I'm trying to square up our cases. We've got some cases on ice machines, for example. Premises owners that have ice machines know that it's going to happen eventually, that somebody's going to spill ice on the floor when they're dispensing it, or walk down the aisles spilling a drink. But we don't hold them liable because they have an ice machine on their premises that they know is going to at some point distribute ice, or somebody will distribute ice on the floor. We only hold them liable when they know that the ice is there. And I guess, are you saying that there's no fact question? I mean, there's no. Where's the evidence that Rice knew that the Velcro sign of 3.5 pounds would fall, or had any chance of falling?
The knowledge of witness Belsham as to the qualities of Velcro. Witness Belsham was the one in charge. Others in similar position were in charge, and the general knowledge of Velcro. My opposition suggests that every single case, I guess, and there are a lot of cases that are really $75,000 cases, $25,000 cases, $10,000 cases. Are we suggesting that in each one we need to trot a group of experts and say, Grant Pisces, oh yes, I've studied Velcro all my life. I've been to Indonesia where they make it. I know all about Velcro. And I'm going to tell you jurors about Velcro. Jurors say, sir, we know about Velcro. Why do lawyers and judges impose upon us the judgment of hired experts? And if we carry that to its logical conclusion, the list of experts available in the phone book is liable to exceed the list of lawyers available who can get you lots of money if you just call them up. The point is that Rice knew that Velcro was not the best way to hang the sign. And nobody has suggested that this court has ever said, in any opinion, anywhere, that the business is entitled to one free bite at the business invitee. Oh, sure. If we approved this very sign and form before, and they put it right back up the same way, we might even have a case of gross negligence. In fact, that they did not put it back up the same way, the evidence is replete with the fact that when they put it back up, they used the screws, whether they felt they were needed or not. Now, I can't get into long arguments about the effects of duct tape, the effects of scotch tape. I suppose if you wrap something with enough duct tape, you couldn't pull it loose with a team of mules. I don't know that. I've never tried that. And I don't know of any experts in the field. The best experts I know in this field are my own children. My own children and my wife, they know about Velcro. They've been forced to buy shoes whose soles weren't worn out because the Velcro wouldn't hold them anymore. These are matters of common knowledge about Velcro. And these are matters that this court should refuse to require either that we prove that Rice Food Market had already swatted one, and therefore they shouldn't swat another. That's not the burden. All we need to prove, and all we did prove, and all we established for the jury was that this was not a good way to put up a sign, that it created a danger. CMH tells us, Corbin tells us, that we don't have to prove that they knew of the specific danger, like Judge Brister's sword of Damocles. I'm not here to try to rebut whatever is said about David Letterman. I don't know what David Letterman did or wouldn't do. I spend my time at night studying my briefs. But David Letterman was not called as a witness in the case. He might have said, I myself have suspended myself with Velcro and I did not fall. They might have done that. I don't know. But they didn't do it. We don't have that before us. And this court doesn't have it before. This court has before it a situation where, in spite of the suggestion that the instructions were either or, Velcro or screws, no. The screw holes were there to be used. And nobody can escape the conclusion that Velcro might be a way.
So if you have four hole screws in the sign and you use three, then that's unreasonably dangerous.
Judge Brister, a great lawyer once told me that once you have driven three nails into the coffin, never try to drive the fourth your dog eared every time. So I can't really answer
it, that. Whether you use all the nail holes or not depends on how many there are. It depends on the circumstances. Whether you use the nail holes versus the Velcro kind of depends on how heavy the sign is and where you're going to hang it and things like that, does it not? So what is there? So the question is, what is there about this case that would allow a jury to say you should have known that was unreasonable and dangerous to Velcro a sign, 3.5-pound sign up?
Your Honor, I urge you to study the pictures. This was a pre-designed kiosk. The design was set. The location of the sign was shown. The structure was there to which to screw the ends. The middle was a canvas top, like a circus. That's where the Velcro was. Whether the Velcro was there to hold the canvas to the sign or the sign to the canvas, well, we don't know. We don't know. But the suggestion that we need an expert in here to say, oh, yes, I've made a life study of Velcro. I certainly have. I've devoted my entire career to Velcro, and I can say to you jurors, you're not smart enough to figure this out yourself. So I'll figure it out for you.
Mr. Alexander, sounds like you're saying there's no direct testimony that the manner in which the sign was hung is unreasonably dangerous, that if the jury verdict on that point is to be upheld, it's based upon an inference from evidence. Is that...
We're allowed to draw inferences, but if the court will read the testimony of Mr. Belshire, he admitted for all practical purposes, that it was unreasonably dangerous. He just didn't know what the exact dangers were, and we didn't know what the exact dangers were.
Well, the respondent takes issue with the way you frame his testimony. They say he admitted that Rice knew the way it was hung and that it was attached by Velcro, and they hadn't inspected it in some time, but they say he didn't admit that it was unreasonably dangerous.
Your Honor, he may not have said those words, but he admitted I happen to be an eyewitness to the event. I know what he said, and I urge the court to read what he said.
You think what he said is tantamount to saying it was unreasonably dangerous?
It would raise the inference, Your Honor, for the jury then to determine that it was unreasonably dangerous. He didn't say, of course. He didn't say, we created a monster out there. We might as well put a nuclear bomb over the C's candy counter. He didn't say that. But from what he did say, from what he did admit, the jury was entitled to draw the inference that they did. And certainly the Court of Appeals was not. They did not sit as jurors. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Further questions, I will reply, but I have my time is up.
I think we're done. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All right.